I am Planta on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. One of my favorite guests on the program, Rona Maynard, joins me again. She's the author of the memoir, My Mother's Daughter. She blogs regularly at ronamaynard.com, and she's the former editor of Chatelaine. Please welcome back to the Planta on the Line program, Rona Maynard. Good morning, Ms. Maynard.
It's good to be here.
Thanks for joining us. How have you been?
I've been fine and getting ready to go to the sun and shorten winter by a month.
Very exciting. Where are you guys going?
We're going to Sarasota, where we've rented a condo, and we are not flying this time. We are driving. But I know you want to talk about making the air as good as it possibly can be.
Yeah, I haven't been on a plane in about 5 years. And I have this really long flight coming up after the holidays. It's about 16 hours. And I don't know, I don't know what should I do. I asked Rafe Mayer yesterday, and he says the only thing to do is once you get there to get used to the time changes, to stay up until it's their bedtime.
Oh, I don't know if you're going to be able to do that, Joe. You're obviously going to Asia,
yeah,
which we did in May. And it must have taken the best part of a week to get used to the jet lag. But as for what you do in the air, believe it or not, the first thing I would suggest is a really good pair of eye shades, the ones that are contoured to fit your face and not the cheapo ones that they give out in business class if you're lucky enough to be sitting there.
What about bringing an iPod and things like that? Do you do that?
I always bring an iPod. I always bring an iPod, and I like to have one or two new CDs on the iPod so that I have something fresh to look forward to. I find it's all about breaking up the flight as much as I can. It is just so monotonous. So I have my iPod, I have my CDs, I always take a magazine, and I like to buy it at the airport so that I know whatever I've got is going to grab my interest. If I just pick a magazine off the coffee table that I've had there for 2 weeks, it won't excite me in the same way.
Did you bring books at all?
Oh, I always bring books for every mood. I would typically have about four in my carry-on bag, sometimes more than that if they're small books, because you don't want to commit yourself to a book that, once you get into it, doesn't really hold your interest.
Yeah.
And I like to have a variety of reading experiences. So I will usually take a novel or two, and I always look for something with a plot. This is not the time to be taking something really highbrow. If you've got to keep rereading the paragraph over and over and over to know what it is you've read, it's not for you. It's got to be friendly for the plane, and it's got to lend itself to frequent interruptions. So short chapters are good as well.
About the jet lag, melatonin, I see that a lot, and I saw that at Costco and things like that. Is that something that that one should be taking if they're say, having trouble sleeping when you're adjusting to time?
I have not used it for jet lag. I know there are lots of people who do. For our trip to Asia, we were actually prescribed a low-dose sleeping pill for the first few nights.
And did you take the pill?
Yes, I did, and it helped a little.
It did, yeah.
Because it will really slow down your metabolism, and I never take those on a plane because I have very low blood pressure, and I don't want to get sick. I don't want to faint. It has happened. I hate sleeping on planes, by the way, and the best I can ever do is doze on a plane. And this is true even if I have one of those handy-dandy beds that they give you in business class. It's never going to be a great night. and you've just got to accept that. It's part of the price of travel.
Yeah. I've wanted to talk to you for years now about sleep. You've had a battle with insomnia. Have you? How long was that?
It was very long. I guess I've always had a tendency to it, but it got particularly bad in 2006 as I was finishing my book, My Mother's Daughter. And then, for some reason, the day that Alice Munro endorsed my book and told everyone how great it was, I got terribly anxious, and I slept worse. I couldn't sleep at all because Alice Munro liked my book. How about that? And also, of course, by that time, the book was done, and I missed it. It was like a friend that had gone away. So I was finding that night after night went by, and I'd have very broken sleep, you know, totaling maybe 2 or 3 hours, really low-quality sleep. I was just like a zombie the next day, constantly headachy and cranky and tired and just not myself. And although I don't believe in relying on chemical crutches, I finally called my GP and said, we're going to have to do something about this because I can't live my life. And he, with some misgivings, said, okay, I'll give you a prescription for sleeping pills and you tell me how you're doing. Well, after a few days on those, I had to call him and say, well, sorry, I need something stronger. And I ended up taking the highest dose that you can be prescribed of a drug called Imovane, big honking blue pills. And believe it or not, I was on those pills for a year. I took one every night. And they were prescribed for me on the understanding that when I came off them, and I would have to come off them, I would need medical help. So the day came, and I was just dreading it, and I went to a place called the Toronto Sleep Clinic, where I filled out a very elaborate questionnaire, and I was put on a behavioral modification program for my sleep. And I'd never heard of this kind of thing before. The idea is you learn what they call good sleep hygiene. And these were my rules. I was supposed to go to bed at the same time every night. It was to be 11 or 11:30. And no variation. By the way, I like to go to bed at 10 or 10:30, but I would have to stay up later.
Yeah.
The idea being to stay up until I was really good and tired. And then I was to get up at the same time the next morning, and I was not allowed to have 8 hours, only 7, and I would have to set the alarm and get up then, whether I was still sleepy or not, no matter how much sleep I had, I'd get up with the alarm. The third thing was, if I did wake up in the middle of the night, to get up and do something very unstressful, like read a relaxing book until I started to yawn, and then go back to sleep to bed, give myself 20 minutes, and then if I still wasn't asleep, get up again and repeat as often as necessary. So you're probably thinking, and I was certainly thinking, well, geez, how do I know that 20 minutes have gone by? I've forgotten to tell you that I wasn't supposed to look at the clock. No,
yeah.
Clock watching. That was key.
Uh-huh.
And he said, well, you just guess. Now, no clock watching turned out to be very important, because what do you do when you have insomnia? What do, Joe?
You look at the clock.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
You look at the clock, and then you think, oh, my God, I've got to be up in 3 hours. And I'm going to feel terrible, and I'm not going to be able to get through my day, and I'll have to do an interview, and I'll have to sit in a meeting and make sense of what's going on. oh, can't do that. And the more you look at the clock, the more anxious you get. So if you try to defuse that anxiety, you're actually going to be in a better position for sleep. And that's what I did. I turned the clock away so that I couldn't see it. And the next day, I also had rules. When I got up, I was only to have one cup of coffee. Well, I cheated a little bit. I had one and a half.
Yeah.
And I said, well, if I don't have any coffee in the afternoon, isn't that okay? Can't I still have two or three cups in the morning? And the doctor said, no, because it stays in your the caffeine stays in your system and it revs you up.
Mm-hmm.
So believe me, the first few days on this regimen were kind of tough. They were very tough. Probably the first week was pretty bad. I'd get up, I wanted more coffee, and I couldn't do it. I found that it helped to have a really good breakfast with some protein in it.
Yeah.
Not a Danish pastry, but have a couple of eggs if I'd had a really bad night. Because that'll help you power through the morning.
Yeah. Did you find you still have the problem now? I mean, are you off it now? I mean, do you sleep regularly?
I sleep pretty well now. Not perfectly, but fairly well. And I have learned so much from this, I just can't overstate it. One of the things I've learned is that if you have one bad night, it's not going to kill you.
Yeah.
I would have a bad night, and I would go and do a vigorous workout with my personal trainer, and I'd be fine. I was amazed. What kills you is two or three bad nights in a row. The other thing I learned was, if you worry less about sleep, if you just relax and say, so what, so I have one bad night, you really will start to sleep better. Chronic insomniacs are people who obsess about their sleep. Don't you find?
Yeah.
Don't you find you go to bed and you think, well, how bad is it going to be tonight?
Do you find that you knock off easy? Like, I mean, like when you hit the sack, that the problem is that if you don't fall asleep quickly, that's where the anxiety comes from.
Well, no. There were different patterns. Sometimes I would have a hard time falling asleep, but the more usual pattern was that I would go to sleep a couple of hours, and then I'd get up and I couldn't go back to sleep.
And napping during the day, do they advise
they
on that?
They say no.
No.
They don't do it.
Yeah.
Because the whole idea is to get onto a really regular schedule.
When you wrote about this on your blog, did you find that a lot of people contacted you about this, that they were interested in the subject?
Oh, yes, because insomnia is a huge problem. And people always think, what's wrong with me? It's something that tends to get worse with age. And you know how when you're a kid, you go to sleep and you're just gone. And you sleep right through the night and you don't wake up even to go to the bathroom. And then as the older you get, the harder it becomes to actually enjoy not just an unbroken night's sleep, but a night with only one time that you get up.
I want to ask about the Tiger Woods situation, and you're a former magazine editor. This great interest that we're seeing in him, he's on the cover of magazines and the sort. How much of the interest on the story has to do with how profitable it is to have him on the cover, that people want to know every salacious detail or rumor?
Well, people want to sell magazines.
And do you find that after a scandal like this, I mean, are there statistics in the business that scandals like this sort of drive up the readership?
Well, in the magazine that I edited, Chatelaine, that was not the case.
That was a monthly deal, right?
Because that was a monthly. But generally, people who the public is really curious about are going to drive magazine sales. And it could be somebody like Tiger Woods, who is incredibly good-looking, incredibly brilliant at golf, and now we also see rather deceitful. People are curious about him. But remember how curious people were about Susan Boyle.
Yeah.
When that became a big story, and that was not scandal. That was Susan Boyle coming out of nowhere, ugly duckling, mesmerizing people with the power of her voice. Sometimes when a famous person dies, you get the same effect, whether it's Michael Jackson or Farrah Fawcett.
Well, when you edited Chatelaine and you were deciding the cover, how much time in advance did you have to do that? Like the cover for, I don't know, the next issue is January. When would the cover be set?
Oh, we were not like the magazines that you and I are talking about, Joe, because our covers were lifestyle covers,
yeah,
and not celebrity covers. And we would actually set a year's cover subjects all at one time.
Really?
And they'd be around themes, you know, like...
Yeah. Christmas.
Christmas, summer entertaining, gardening. And these would not necessarily be the most important things in the issue, but they would give us an image with power that we could use to drive sales. In May, people are thinking about planting their gardens. And a lovely shot of a woman in her garden with a colorful flat of flowers will move magazines if it's well shot.
What did you make of the Sarah Palin book? Have you read it?
I have not read it, and you know I am not going to read it. I have read so much about Sarah Palin that I cannot absorb one more word. When Sarah Palin came along, I actually thought she was pretty refreshing in a way. I didn't agree with her on the issues, but I liked her feistiness. I liked her spirit. I thought, and I actually wrote this on my blog, that she seemed like somebody I would like to sit beside on a long bus trip. Or a 15-hour plane ride, if we're talking about that.
Yeah.
But I've come to feel that she is a deeply untrustworthy person, and that the folksy, down-home image that she presents to the world is, in fact, extremely calculating. There was, or it's been very carefully calculated and composed. There was a period when I was reading everything that I saw about Sarah Palin and gnashing my teeth. I say this, by the way, as a dual citizen who has a vote in American elections.
Yeah.
And I could not bear the thought of President Palin, and I still can't. But I don't want to upset myself any further. I think we have some distance to go before the Republicans choose their next candidate.
And so for Christmas, you'll be in Florida, will you?
After Christmas, we're going to Florida, but for Christmas, we're going to be right here in Toronto.
Yeah, and is it a big deal for you? Do you celebrate that?
No, it's not. Well, actually, I should say we have several Christmases. Christmas at our home, my husband and me and our son and daughter-in-law and grandbaby is usually just a quiet brunch and a small number of presents, but a week or so earlier, there's an extended family Christmas with a lot of people and a lot of paper and ribbons and turkey and noise and wine and whatnot. And that's more boisterous.
Do you enjoy it?
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. Well, the best of the season to you and yours, and happy Christmas. You're good to do this, and I appreciate it, Rona.
Thank you.
The website for more is ronamaynard.com. Rona Maynard is in Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.